Welcome to our Saturday simulcast, joined by Brian Newbert and Tom Dienhart, as I almost always am. I want to thank the Union Club Hotel, sponsor of this Saturday simulcast. It's a Travel and Leisure World's Best Hotel in Indiana nominee. Voting is now open. It's been open for a while, so vote now at PurdueUnionClub.com for more details and to show your Purdue pride. We appreciate the Union Club. Also, you can become a member of goldenblack.com. That's an easy thing to do. We have free trials available on the site. It may be the off season, but it's Brian's on season, at least in terms of basketball recruiting and watching AAU, which is slowly starting up. And we'll get that as talk a little bit about that today as well. And obviously a lot of news and notes in football as we look ahead to the 2021 season. Brian, we'll start with you in the first topic today. Assistant coaches, and actually for both of you this week, because they put both the football and men's basketball had hires. Paul Lusk returns. You know Paul Lusk very well. And just to get an overview of what that means from your perspective and anything else that you've seen so far that might indicate what will happen for the second hire, as Steve Lutz obviously moved on to a new job this week at Texas Corpus Christi as the head coach. So, Brian, what say you in terms of the Lusk hire?
Yeah, first off, you said you're almost always joined by Brian and Tom. Who else would you be joined by? Do you have some sort of staff going on here that
there are times about? When it's just one of us, but it's
stepping out behind 99%. Our backs here.
Yeah, I've got my own.
I see how it is.
Secret podcast. Yes.
yeah, Paul Lusk obviously is one of Matt Painter's closest confidants. I guess in coaching has worked at Purdue before, has done good work at Purdue before. He and Matt Painter will be on the same wavelength from day one. I think there's real value to that especially when you're replacing multiple staff members. I think that there's continuity amidst a disruption here. I think that's really valuable. I think he's a good defensive coach. I think he's done a really good job at Creighton. I think he did a really good job at Purdue defensively early on. I think he's a pretty good motivator type of guy. I think he's got a lot of energy, a lot of spirit to him. And, you know, Purdue has changed from a defensive perspective a little bit over the years, from that kind of really aggressive pressuring man-to-man defense to kind of what they are now, where they're kind of playing sort of a money ball game based on the analytics in terms of who needs to be guarded in a certain way and who doesn't, that kind of thing. So Purdue defensively is a little bit different than it was than Paul Lusk was first around. But I think this was a higher years in the making. I think that as soon as, you know, Steve Lutz was hired, I think I could have told you that as soon as he gets a head coaching job, you know, Paul Lusk will be here back here so fast your head will spin. And that's exactly what happened. Regarding the other hire, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. It's going to be an offensive coach. It's going to have to be somebody who's going to work with Purdue's guards because that was what Micah Shrewsbury did. I don't know if Matt Painter will stay with the same coordinator situation he had with Shrewsbury, because when Shrewsbury came on board, it was exactly what I just talked about with Paul Lusk, where they were already on the same wavelength. Those two knew each other so well. They had such a good relationship. Yeah. So whether whoever comes in right away is going to be the quote unquote play caller right away, I don't know. That might be something where, you know, trust and staff camaraderie needs to be developed over time. I don't know who they're going to hire. I know they talked to Carson Cunningham. I don't think that's going to happen. Other than that, I know they've looked at the NBA. I know there are college head coaches out there. I know there are former college head coaches out there. I do know these are very attractive positions nowadays, because Matt Painter has a very good reputation in the business as somebody to work for, as somebody who will help his guys get head coaching jobs, as somebody who will prepare them for head coaching jobs. And Purdue figures to have a pretty good team here for a couple of years, and success is the best springboard of all. And Purdue pays competitively now, as opposed to maybe where they were a decade ago. So these are some of the best openings on the assistant coaching market this particular year. So I would imagine Purdue's going to have, or has had, quite a bit of really high level interest in these jobs.
Hey, Brian, talk about, I mean, how working for Matt Painter's really become a launching pad for head coaches to become I mean, for assistant coaches to become head coaches, I mean, and that just has to add to the attractiveness of wanting to, you know, come work for Matt. And just talk about maybe the college of coaches that he's been able to spawn during his, what, 15, 16 year tenure here at Purdue.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Matt Painter carries a lot of weight in his profession these days. I mean, I'm not going to compare his resume to the old guard of, you know, the Boeheim, Krzyzewski's, Roy Williams or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think his voice carries a lot of weight. I think, you know, the USA basketball part of it, you know, he's a very influential guy in NCAA basketball. He's on a lot of committees. He's kind of a guy people lean on for opinion. Mm-hmm. I think people generally everywhere know that Purdue does things the right way. And I think that, you know, Purdue stands for the right things. What that actually gets you from a wins and losses perspective can be debated, but it certainly, you know, it certainly helps you earn respect. It certainly earns you credibility. I think people look at him as a guy who runs a good, consistent program. And that's what people want. And I think, you know, kind of behind closed doors, I think he involves his assistants in everything. I think he's a guy who looks out for them. He will stand up for his guys when it comes time for them to be up for jobs. And that's just kind of been his track record. And I think he has really earned a lot of clout in college basketball. And I think people look at what he's built or rebuilt at Purdue, I should say, as sort of the model for what a lot of programs who are undergoing changes sort of want to do. And I think that has given him, you know, quite a bit of, I keep saying this over and over, a lot of clout with ADs and whatnot. And I think he's sort of a guy, even though he doesn't have, you know, the Final Fours, the national titles, whatever it might be, he might not have the name recognition as a household name in college basketball, though he's certainly getting there. I think he has a lot of clout in the profession. And I think people look at him and Purdue as sort of the model of what they're looking for. So naturally, they look to his staff for that. And that's why you've seen Jack Owens get a chance, Greg Gary get a chance, Steve Lutz get a chance, Micah Shrewsbury get a chance. Now, Micah Shrewsbury had a resume outside of Purdue. Steve Lutz had a resume outside of Purdue. But I think, you know, people look at Purdue as one of the first schools they kind of look at as sort of a model program. And when it's Painter, they're also advocating for his guys strongly and using the influence he's earned in his profession while also shooting people straight. You know, if a guy's not ready, he's not gonna push them on people. I think that's kind of what has made Purdue, you know, sort of the lightning rod for head coaching interest that it's become. But also in turn, that then makes Purdue a much more attractive job for prospective candidates too, because, you know, Steve Lutz came to Purdue thinking, hey, if I work with Matt Painter at Purdue for a couple of years, that's going to be a springboard for me. He could have stayed at Creighton and gotten somewhere too. Micah Shrewsbury comes back sort of a preordained deal with Painter to work at Purdue for a year or two, get back in recruiting, get back on the college basketball radar screen, get a head coaching job. He's becoming this sort of incubator for guys who are close to getting their first jobs, but just have to get over the hump. And it just speaks volumes about his stature in the business.
Eight coaches, I believe it is now in his coaching tree. I think one included at Southern Illinois, but that's an impressive number for a person that's only 50 years old.
Yeah.
Yes, Matt Painter has been a head coach for a long time, but I concur with everything Brian's saying about that in terms of Matt's not only noted stature among coaches and around among the college basketball world. Tom, men's football, I should say, had a hire this week and completed, or seems to complete, Coach Jeff Brohm's staff. James Adams comes over. Tell us a little bit about that. And you wrote a little bit about the reshuffling, but things seem to be complete and Purdue's done with spring practice, while other teams are still playing some spring games here the next few weekends. But the Boilermakers are done looking ahead to the 2021 season.
Yeah, the last piece of a remade Purdue defensive staff, you know, it has been made, guys. As you said, Alan, James Adams, product of Wake Forest, played linebacker at Wake Forest, the teammate of Chris Barclays. obviously produced current running back coach in Winston-Salem for the Demon Deacons. And Adams also coached for Brad Lambert when Brad was the head coach at Charlotte. So there's familiarity. James comes immediately from Annapolis, Maryland, where he worked at the Naval Academy, coaching cornerbacks. Of course, Purdue already has a cornerbacks coach, right? Ron Inglis was hired from Florida for that spot, but you'd think Ron would shift to safeties, which is where he coached in Gainesville. Let James Adams coach what he's familiar with, cornerbacks. I guess the interesting thing for me, guys, is going to be, is Jeff Rom going to make somebody else on the defensive staff a co-defensive coordinator? You know, Anthony Poindexter was a co-defensive coordinator slash safeties coach. He's the one who left prior to spring ball for Penn State. It's going to be interesting to see if Jeff wants to do that or not. Obviously, Ron English and Mark Hagan both have resumes befitting a co-DC title. Brad Lambert has that title right now for Purdue. He's going to be calling the defense. So I guess that's what I'm intrigued to see, guys, is if there's going to be another co-DC to work in concert with Brad Lambert. As Brian and you guys know, you know, that's always been the MO under Brom. He's always had a co-defensive coordinator. So we'll see what happens, guys. I'm told James is supposed to get on campus on Sunday. And I imagine we'll see some official announcement from the university next week sometime, I'm guessing.
You know, Brian, we watched coaching dynamics for years, some very positive in Purdue football, some that have been challenges, but this is an interesting cohesiveness is everything when you talk about getting a staff together, building culture, things that maybe Jeff Brom always is all head football coaches are trying to do. I like what I see because he's got some voices, some people that are familiar with one another, but yet kind of come from a different place. How do you see that staff from your perspective?
Yeah, I think that he's always, at least with his recent hires, ever since his first staff, I think he's done a good job trying to strike a balance between energy and experience. And I don't mean to suggest that experience can't have energy, but you kind of know what I mean there. I think that all these hires he's made the last 2 years, he can now make from a place where I think he's got enough background with Purdue now where he probably has a really good idea what he needs, really good idea what he wants. I mean, he's experienced relative success, but also he's experienced a good deal of struggles here. And I think now, he's probably grown as a coach to some extent from that. And he also understands, perhaps a little bit of where the program's fallen short a little bit, what he needs. So I think he's made all these hires he's made in the last 2 years, and he's turned over a hell of a lot of his staff in a very short period of time. I think he's been able to make those hires from probably a different context than maybe he made his with his first staff, bringing who he brought from Western Kentucky and the few guys he had to bring from the outside. I think that, maybe that first staff didn't have a whole lot of experience all told relative to a lot of staffs in the Big Ten. And, I think that now he's got some guys who've been around the block quite a bit. And it's a matter of, I guess, them getting onboarded effectively, but also them, being leaned on and, allowed to do their job, so to speak. And, he seems like he's going to be more involved in the defense as well. So that's, that speaks to him, taking action regarding something that obviously needs to turn around. I think, it's important that the offensive coaches and the defensive coaches be on the same page too, because they're all working in the same direction and they can all make each other better on the practice field. So if Jeff Brom has a little bit more of a background with his own defense, I think that, conceivably could help them offensively. But, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak, and they have to
we'll find out.
They hired a lot of new guys that people were excited about last year, and obviously under weird circumstances with a pandemic and all, but we'll see what happens. It does seem like, based on what I've read and seen from a million miles away here, not that I'm down on the ground covering this stuff necessarily, but Brad Lambert seems like the opposite of Bob Diaco, and I think the results last year told you one thing you might want is the opposite of Bob Diaco. So I think things will be a little bit better behind the scenes. I would have to think. I don't know exactly what happened behind closed doors last year, but it certainly didn't seem like there was a lot of harmony there. Just based on indicators, you know, the way Jeff Brohm talked publicly, the way that just kind of watching the games, it didn't look like, and not just the coaching staff, but the whole team, it didn't look like a unit that was, everyone was on the same page moving in the same direction.
Yeah, and that's going to be a storyline, obviously, watching as things try to move in a positive direction for 2021. All right, we're looking at one of the topics that came up this week and we'll touch on briefly is football finances. The Des Moines Register, I think, wrote an article on University of Iowa and its ability to get a $50 million loan from the university to deal with the shortfall that I think every athletic department is dealing with in some manner. Some may be larger than others. Obviously, Iowa has, I think, a few more sports. Purdue, a little bit bigger budget than Purdue, I think $122 million. In revenue last year, maybe that whatever that was, it's about 15 to 20% bigger based on the figures we saw. Tom, I wanted to ask you, and obviously we'll maybe a chance to talk to Mike Babinski here in the next week or two to find out a little bit more. Some sources talking about that Purdue may not be in a situation where it may not need to go to the university for a loan, or there's a way to remedy the situation from a financial standpoint. That sounds like a good thing. And we still know that if the numbers that we have talked about, $20 million deficit in football, $10 million in men's basketball, some level of deficit in the television compared to what it was pre-pandemic, Purdue has some holes to fill. They've raised some money, but all those factors play into an interesting dynamic as all these athletic departments try to weather the storm of the pandemic and also move forward in a positive way as they reopen full bore.
Yeah. From sort of what I've been able to understand and glean, Purdue most likely is not going to go that path that Iowa took as far as taking a loan from the main campus, from the university at large to try to cover financial losses incurred by the pandemic. You know, for the last 11, 12 months, we've read about the bleeding, the financial hardship at universities across the nation, dealing with, money shortfalls, be it from gate revenue, from TV revenue and whatnot. So yeah, everybody's felt the pinch. We've seen furloughs, we've seen salary cuts as well. But again, it sounds like from what we can gather, Purdue's not going to go that route, guys. They're going to try to figure out an alternative way to cover their losses. Alan, you spoke to those, and to continue to raise money. We all know they've started a fundraising campaign, which shortly after the pandemic started, I think more than a game.
Right.
And Purdue does not want to make this a multi-year problem. I think they want to try to get this in their rearview mirror, and they're going to continue, it sounds like, to try to address the financial issues just through continuing fundraising efforts. But I do think, fellas, from what I'm hearing, that other universities within the Big Ten, I'm sure probably even nationally, are probably going to have to maybe turn to their universities at large to look for some type of loan relief to cover these losses. So, again, a lot of entities are going to be trying to crawl out of a financial hole the next couple of years here as we slowly creep our way out of this pandemic and sort of the financial hardship that it's wrought on so many people and institutions.
Yeah, Brian, you know, you look at Purdue's situation, obviously, we've had Mike Berghoff on Golden Black Live or wherever we interviewed him, the chair of the Board of Trustees, and they've been emphatic about not making this a one-year problem as much as you possibly can. There are endowments out there. There's private funding or funding that doesn't necessarily have to meet the light of day. We don't know the answer to some of those questions. I don't want to purport to say that we do. But Mitch Daniels has always been, been very proud. Purdue has been, has been its biggest banner has been, we are freestanding, from the university. One of 8 to 10 Power 5 schools that are even in that boat. That all is part of Purdue's mantra. That certainly is Mitch Daniels' mantra. And Purdue has made some cuts in certain places from a staffing standpoint. I know there are still furloughs going on within the athletic department. All those things are there, but it's really going to be an interesting thing to watch unfold as we get back to normal, and it impacts not only the operations, but maybe also the long term in terms of stadium projects and all those kinds of things, Ryan.
Right. I mean, the intent is noble to make this a one-year problem, but anybody who can make this a one-year problem deserves the Congressional Medal of Freedom here, because this is obviously something that touches on a lot of different stuff. And, you know, the reality too is your revenue is probably not going back to 100% right away either. You know,
I think that's true.
I mean, I don't know what capacity is going to look like this football season. But if it's 100%, even then, you know, I still don't know if you just kind of hit the ground running right away. I think you probably had to take things apart a little bit to a certain extent before you could put them back together. And I don't know if you're going to be able to just take it apart one September 1st and then put it right back together the next September 1st. Purdue, you know, to use Purdue as an example, I'm sure they're understaffed now. They've had some people leave, I know. Not necessarily because of the pandemic, but because of a lot of
opportunities
that they haven't been able to replace, you know, and I just don't think that, I think that making this a one-year problem has to be everyone's goal. You don't want to mortgage your future to just survive the day, but this is something that's going to ripple through, you know, coming seasons in some capacity. It might be a big capacity. It might be a little capacity, but some capacity. You know, for a long, long time. I don't know how they're gonna do it financially. I'm sure Purdue's gonna get creative in some kind. They're gonna keep asking people for money. You know, they're gonna try to monetize whatever they can when the time comes where they can do that again. But they're obviously in a tough spot here. Obviously, the university, you know, probably doesn't want to look like they're, you know, basically bailing the athletic department out. That would be a little bit contrary to Purdue's history with its athletic department. That would be a little bit contrary to Mitch Daniels' rep as a university president, but these are extraordinary circumstances. You know, there haven't really been times like these. So that's what other people are doing. Maybe Purdue in some form gets creative in a way that the university helps the athletic department a little bit. Does so as quietly as possible, probably, but I wouldn't anticipate, you know, as Tom has mentioned, I wouldn't anticipate them just cutting a check for $50 million the way, you know, the University of Iowa did. Now, I don't know if that's a loan that Iowa gave.
It's a loan. Yeah. It's a loan.
Yeah.
According to the Des Moines Register article. And that's, you know, again,
a loan is a way to launder the optics of bailing out your athletic department with state funding.
Yeah. Laundry is a good word for it. I'm not saying we're going to the Cayman Islands on this deal, but there is some creative ways to figure this part out from that standpoint, and that's what's going to be an interesting storyline from that standpoint. All right, well, we're kind of put a wrap. We've gone longer on a couple of topics, but good stuff today, guys. And I'll give you a quick round the horn. I know Brian's going to be making some trips to Indianapolis and doing some recruiting coverage. Tom, from your standpoint, obviously looking ahead to 2021 and trying going position by position, what will be some of the things you'll talk about on the site this week?
Yeah, also some NFL draft stuff coming up for viewers or readers to consume. I spoke with a guy who covers the NFL draft. I spoke with an NFL scout I know for a team as well yesterday at length, trying to get his off-the-record comments as well. So, yeah, I'll start to drip and grab those things out over coming days, guys. April 29th to May 1st is the NFL draft. It's going to be in Cleveland, Ohio this year. And it's always a fun event. Purdue had, a couple of guys pick last year. And we'll see if they can continue their trend as well. The big storyline, of course, will Rondale Moore be a first-round draft choice? Depends on who you ask. So it's going to be fun to continue to watch and monitor that moving forward.
Brian, AAU, it's an interesting time of year. I hope it's a fun time of year, though. I know it's extremely busy when you're on your weekends in Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, eventually at the end of this month. Just a little bit about your schedule. And, of course, Purdue also is – you had a big story on the site this week that got a lot of play about Brian Waddell, also Matt Waddell's son, a guy that might be a Purdue's next 2021 class member. What's up with you here as you make the trek here and over the next few weeks?
Tomorrow I'm going to see Brian Waddell at the Hoosier Basketball Top 60 workout. It'll be I've seen him play live before, but this will be my first time really only watching him. So that, and then next weekend, I think I'm cleaning the house, and then the weekend after that,
fertilizing the grass. I got to cut the grass too. That's what I'm working on.
I'm not going to cut my grass till like August. if that, maybe November. And then the weekend after that, there's a big grassroots tournament in Westfield. Fletcher Lawyer will be there. Jameel Brown will be there. What good that does me anymore, I don't know. But, and then after that, I will be covering Spieth the day after my second Pfizer shot. So
there you go.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Now I covered a peach jam 2 years ago or 3 years ago, whatever it was, with my leg cut open. So if I can do that, I figure I can probably fight off a few after effects of a vaccine to cover a weekend long basketball tournament. The weekend after that, there's a football camp at Ben Davis, a rivals camp. I imagine there'll be some Purdue prospects there. I don't know yet, but I'm planning on going to that. And in June, there will be, the Indiana All-Star Games. Fingers crossed.
Yep.
Hopefully. In the meantime, I'll just try to figure out who the hell Purdue's recruiting, who the hell Purdue's going to hire. One has to happen probably before the other, and kind of go from there.
All right, Tom and I are going to also revamp we got to come up with some new subject matter, our memory series that last summer. And one of the people that we all know well, Leroy Keyes, is ailing, and I think back in Lafayette area, are going to be soon on hospice care. One of the great legends. We'll talk about that as well. The best to the Keyes family. Leroy has been a friend of Golden Black and obviously a great Purdue legend for many, many, many years. And we wish him the best as well. So, guys, thank you very much. This is usually our usual group, and we appreciate that as well. It's always fun to spend our Saturdays at least getting reacquainted about the issues of the day. I want to thank the Union Club Hotel at Purdue and Travel Leisure World's Best Hotel in Indiana nominee. Go to the Purdue Union Club Hotel.com for more details, and you can show your Purdue pride. We want to remind people as well that you can become a member of goldenblack.com. As the gentleman just outlined, both Tom and Brian, a lot going on here, kind of the intriguing time of year as we look at some other topics, recruiting, et cetera, on Golden Black. So guys, have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll look forward to talking again next for our Saturday simulcast next week as well, and have a great weekend all. Take care.